We made it, folks. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, the technically challenged Mr. Head Out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 349th episode of our weekly therapy session. I feel like we should do this twice a week, Nick, that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, what we're investing in. Everybody gets a critical metals fund. We're going to talk about that. I'm going to try to keep the crazy talk about everything going on in the world to a minimum this week because, frankly, it's a lot of the same stuff that we got last week. Just accelerating. We'll touch on it a bit. But before we get to all that, Mr. Hodge, how are you and your beautiful family doing today, sir?
We are doing great, Gerardo. I'm getting back in the swing of it. Had some technical difficulties last week. And a little bit this week. So this is the second time we're doing the intro, but the first time for the live audience. Plenty to talk about in the markets. Got a lot out of our system last week, as you said, lots of cuss words, lots of bizarro banter. And we're in the thick of a metals bull market. So happy to be back here with you. Although I don't know if I could do this two times a week. I might not get anything else done. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. I am fortunate. My beautiful wife still loves me. The kids still love me. They're all healthy. The family is good. Everybody is working hard and thriving. Blessed to have peace, health, and, you know, the opportunities that we have. So let's get into the opportunities that we have. With that being said, look, you mentioned that we have a metals bull market. It's not just us saying it. Governments around the world now are backstopping that metals bull market, right? We have Australia coming out with an announcement this past week that they are setting up a $1.2 billion reserve fund for mainly rare earths and antimony, right? And so that's how Australia is setting up its critical metals reserve. We just had a bill that is being proposed by the U.S. here at home for a $2.5 billion critical minerals stockpile. And so, look, it's not the first that we hear of this. It's not the first time that we've seen this administration and administrations around the world print money to go get some hard assets. But this is primarily, I mean, it's exclusively what I do for a living, right? I play in the critical metals and the resource stock sandbox. You lean heavily towards resource stocks, although you are a master of all, of course. And, you know, I'll also do tech and biotech and wherever there's an opportunity, you go to it. But look, with gold at $4,600, with silver at $92, it's hard not to be excited about the opportunities in the market. Let's start with your thoughts on governments now busting out the checkbook in a bipartisan way. It seems to be one of the few bipartisan things that we can agree on a global scale. The fact that we need independent critical metals and metals resource supply chains. And those are starting to get established with real money and real legislation behind it. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, let me rewind the tape a little bit to last week and then maybe even for the last decade, because we knew that a metals bull market was coming. We talked about the super cycle as early as 2019, 2020 kicking off for various reasons. We've obviously had the precious metals bull cycle now in earnest with gold in 24 and 25 and silver very much so in 25 and 26. We talked last week about how we were likely potentially, whatever word you want to use there, moving into more of a structural bull market for the precious metals with short covering, i.e. the paper market breaking and folks requesting a physical delivery of these metals. That was the reason that silver was going up by $5, $10 a day to end 2025. Well, it's only been a week. It's not copper's done that again in the past week to get above $90 an ounce, hitting $93 an ounce. Yeah, gold got to $4,600. And I was telling you last week that that framework, that psychological framework of, you know, needing to take physical delivery of these metals wasn't something to be ignored. And that was also affecting other metals. Now, we knew that there was materializing and a potential structural supply deficits for many of these metals, copper, rare earths, et cetera, given the ambitions of grid transitions, electricity buildouts, data center buildouts, EVs, all that sort of stuff. And now we're starting to really see the rubber hitting the road, right? So in the same way, I sort of explained that about the fourth turning, just touching on the Bizarro World stuff for a second. We knew that lots of these events were going to unfold. Couldn't exactly pick, you know, ice shootings in Minneapolis for the bingo card, but could have picked, you know, political violence escalating in the U.S., certainly as a generality. Same thing with the metals markets. Could have definitely said rare earths, nickel, copper, tin are going to be in a bull market for the next 5 to 10 years. Might not have necessarily picked, you know, we're going to invade Greenland to get those metals as one of the spots on the bingo card, right? But overall, getting the direction very right on both fronts, and continue to be very right on the direction. And now we're seeing some of those specifics come out, right? Whether that's, at least on the commodities price side, prices moving higher, copper at all-time highs, tin breaking out, nickel stocks, and then nickel prices moving up, lithium now back in a bull market, for example. The order and the tenacity at which those things come are very hard to predict in advance, but generally we knew that they were going to be in a bull market. And so, look, I'm old enough to remember last October, November, when we had a truce with China and the trade war was over, and you and I were saying, look, you can have a truce with China for as long as you want. That doesn't negate the fact that the U.S. doesn't produce, refine, smelt enough of these metals to make a difference, even if it has a cease trade war, ends the tariffs with China and other countries. And so you're seeing some of that back in the news now, right? With Japanese companies not able to get enough rare earths they need, U.S. companies trying to front run them to buy it. And then I was trying to segue into what you were talking about, and I finally gotten myself there. Now countries announcing these multi-billion dollar funds, bills, carve outs, whatever word you want to use there in the terms of the U.S. one, it's actually a bipartisan bill that's been introduced to create a $2.5 billion critical mineral stockpile. Now, that's on top of the big, beautiful act. That's on top of the bipartisan infrastructure bill. All these things that my brain is starting to forget the acronyms and the names for, right? That's on top of the DOE announcement a week or so ago for the enriched uranium here in the United States. And so painting with a broad brush, like all this stuff was bound to happen. And one of the things I wanted to make sure I got out of my mouth was, yes, these individual announcements are important, but being right in the overall direction and managing inside of that is more important. You're going to get another announcement from a different country or a different senator or a different federal agency next week, right? And it's I'm not going to change my positioning unless it's something really, really huge because of that announcement. Just like, just because we got a $2.5 billion announcement this week, I didn't rush out and like change what I was doing. I'm just managing what I'm doing inside of the bull cycle. So I don't know if I gave you any sort of useful information there, but at the end of the day, there's still a dearth of these critical and base metals, especially outside of China, and countries in the Western world are increasingly realizing that and finally starting to do something about it from both a policy and a capital investment perspective. And that's sort of like the truth. That's like Plato's like model of a horse, not like an actual horse, if you remember back to freshman philosophy.
No, look, I think it's important because you and I do this for a living. Like, we do this all day, every day, right? The part that you hit on that I think it's important to explain to people that may be newer to the podcast or newer to the space. Look, it's a metals bulls market, right? You know how I know that? Because there's jokes about metals and nickels now. I shared a joke with you earlier this week, and I have to share it with everybody. This is how you know we're in a commodity bull market, folks. This guy says, hey, I want my payment made in nickels. And he tells this other guy, he says, like actual physical Jefferson nickels. And the guy says, the guy that's owing the payment, he says, well, I don't know if I can get you Jefferson nickels. Like, what if I let you sleep with my wife? And he said, can she bring the nickels? but look, I'm 47 years old, right? I've been in this space for 16 years. I've never seen a market like this, and neither has anyone else. Gold, silver, copper, tin, all four of those made brand new all-time highs in the past 7 days since we last saw you all. That is by definition historic. So I want people to understand that may be newer to this space, what structural deficits mean and what the difference is between a structural deficit and just a bull market that is psychologically a bull market, because we get a lot of those and those tend to last 1 to 2 years. And then the flavor of the year tends to dissipate and then it goes somewhere else and then it goes somewhere else and it rotates. This is a very, very different market, folks. And so I get excited for the opportunities that we can bring you all, our friends and our family, obviously, as well, because this is structural in nature. Can you explain to the fine folks out there, Nick, what you mean by structural deficits?
Yeah, well, I mean, so the resource market is cyclical. You hear a lot about cyclicality. I always tell my wife when we're watching sports and the commentator says physicality, I always repeat them. There's that physicality again. It happens like twice a game, right? A lot of physicality in this game. There's a lot of cyclicality in the resource space and the commodity space. And that happens typically because of a business cycle or a sine wave that you would know is the simplest way to explain it. Prices go up and incent supply to come online. That supply comes online and meets or exceeds what is needed for demand. And then the prices go back down because there's enough supply to meet demand. That's a typical cyclical resource bull market. A structural bull market is when that sine curve goes up. The price of copper is at $6 a pound at an all-time high and breaking out. And the folks who want that metal still can't get enough of it. There's not enough to be fed into the smelters in China. The treatment charges are already at zero, meaning that these folks are willing to take metal even without a premium attached to it. And you start seeing the end users say that we either can't get the metal or we're worried about not being able to get the metal, or there's an actual deficit already in this metal. And you're seeing this, let me put it in terms of AI, because that's what we talk about in this day and age, in terms of AI and data centers. And I'll do it in terms of uranium and copper, but specifically copper. We've been saying that, you know, you can't have this grid build out. You can't have this electrification of everything, which we've been talking about for almost a decade now. I remember talking about electric toothbrushes and things like that years ago. You can't have this transition to clean tech. You can't have a data center build out without copious amounts of copper. And so people have been, and banks, Morgan Stanley, et cetera, Goldman Sachs, have been forecasting future deficits in copper if, you know, certain things didn't play out, certain mines didn't come online, or, you know, the potential capacity, which you see a lot, wasn't brought on in time. Well, here we are moving through 2026, and not only has that, you know, new mines, new capacity, potential capacity, which you'll see in those different scales and charts, the base case, the high supply case, the low supply case, if you've ever read through any of those studies, not only has that new supply not come online, the existing supply has been stymied or hampered, and we've documented that on this
podcast. Who could have called that, Nick?
Well, some of it's black swans. You know, there's always trouble in the mining market. It's easy to say that these mines aren't going to come online. They take longer. Harder to forecast landslides in Indonesia, right? That take out Grasberg, which is still offline, and they say it's going to come online the second half of this month. Until you get to a point where, hold on, let me see if I can attach it a little bit more. But you get all these announcements. We're building a data center. We're building a data center. Larry Ellison's building a data center. Meta's building a data center, you know, Amazon's building a data center. And you and I say, that's great, but where's the stuff going to come from? And they just keep making the announcements, sort of like they kept making the announcements for the climate reductions that never really all the way got here. But at some point, you need to go from announcement to actually doing something. And when you go to actually doing something, which is where we're getting to now, they're saying, oh shit, there's not enough copper. And so you're seeing, I was reading articles this week about stuff that we've been talking about, like, not only do they've got to, these tech companies have to pay for the construction of these data centers, but now they need to take into account where they're getting these raw inputs from, potentially buy them themselves or get into the mining business. And the same with the power generation business. Not only are we running out of copper, we're running out of electricity in general. There's not enough for them. And so they've got to produce their own on-site natural gas plants or whatever it is, solar in some cases, grid scale batteries, like, all this stuff is on the table. And then again, they look at that and it's like, okay, we want to put our own solar plant or our own grid scale battery on our data center. And what do you think they have to do then? Well, where's the lithium or copper going to come from for that? And it's like, you get on this thing. So I gave you a really long answer about a structural bull market, but it's when supply demand in the real time is not theoretical anymore. We're not looking for a future supply deficit. We are experiencing it now. And you get to a point point, and this is probably the real answer, you get to a point of real price discovery. Okay, well, how much is it going to cost to get that pound of copper? Like, really, not with paper markets and hedged futures and LME and CME contracts, etc. How much is that pound of copper or that ounce of silver or gold really worth? And you're seeing in real time,
it's or worth the $5.
It's worth $6. Exactly right. More than your wife.
Listen, however you feel about Elon Musk, and I have, you know, I think he's brilliant. Two, I think he does what everyone that is, you know, as wealthy as he is has historically done, what all the barons do, right? They try to consolidate power, they try to buy and influence elections. And right or wrong, they try to buy and influence public opinion. This is throughout history. This isn't new or unique to Mr. Musk. Feel how you feel about his politics or the way he approaches life. That guy gets stuff done, man. He just unannounced opened a lithium refinery here in Texas. Like, oh, hey, I've been working on this for 18 months. I've been building a lithium refinery. Where he's going to get the lithium from, I haven't gotten that far yet, because the announcement literally was made yesterday. And so when you start seeing not just governments cutting checks and setting up funds and passing bills and doing all of that, but you start seeing the barons, the electricity barons, that realize there is not enough, right? He was tweeting about silver a couple of weeks ago. We talked about that last week. He's been tweeting about all sorts of commodities and metals and the need for them. When you see him actually go out and invest his own capital, shareholder capital, into building his own refinery, that's not going to be a one-off. If you think Larry Ellison or everyone else that he's in a pissing contest with is just going to sit back idly and let Elon be the only one that has the capacity to refine its own, its lithium in this case. It could be copper next month, right? It could be rare earths the month after that. Whatever it is, this metals bull market is here to stay. There's going to be several years worth of opportunity to make a lot of money, folks. And look, there is a lot wrong in the world today. A lot. And it's either the algorithm is getting worse or it's accelerating, right? Typical fourth turning stuff. I don't want to belabor that point too much.
Yep.
I want to focus on the positive and the opportunity. There is a hell of an opportunity in the metals and the resource space, folks. And look, Nick and I have been doing it for a while. We've done well, luckily, in tough markets and bear markets. This bull market is off to a heck of a start in 2026, and is only going to accelerate. The velocity of the gains and the profits is going to change lives for many, many years. And I hope people get off the sidelines and get in the game, because we're going to talk GDP, inflation, and disinflation in just a second. But you have to get off the sidelines. And you don't have to do it with us. If you don't like Gerardo Del Real because he talks too much or he's too opinionated, or you don't like his hair, if you don't like Nick Hodge because you don't like his hair or his beard, or he's too, you know, libertarian, or whatever your excuse may be for not liking us, don't like us. That's cool. Turn it off. But find yourself someone you like, or at least trust, or at least can vet records, performance, and say, let me try that. Because there's a lot of opportunity out there to be had, folks. So please, please, wherever you get your information from, vet the source, vet the performance, vet the bias, and then get to getting, because there is a lot of hay to be made in this bull market. Technical levels, just gold and silver. I mean, they're at all-time highs. There's no ceiling there. You said last week, you know, gold could fall back to, I think you said 4,200, 4,300, and we'd still be in a raging bull market. Silver is having $5 days to the upside and downside now, like that's normal, right? 6% days, like it's normal. Consolidations that used to last months, years. I wrote an editorial for Daily Profit Cycle this week. They're lasting days now, and sometimes hours. Right. We had silver. It was down $5 earlier this morning. It picked up $4 over the last like 3-4 hours. And last I checked, was only down $1 to the $92 level. But, you know, we've seen the price of silver absolutely surge over the past 12 months. Ditto for gold. Ditto for copper. Ditto for tin. Lithium is on a hell of a tear. Uranium, one of the best weeks in, I think, the last 18 months. The spot price hit a high of $84, if I'm not mistaken, this week. The contract price is inching towards the $90 mark. All systems go, folks. Pick your commodity, pick whoever's research you want to follow, and get to making some money, because there's some money to be made.
Yeah, I can touch on a couple of things just really quick. Gold in the near term, 4,500 downside. That's in the next like week or two, right? Could go down to 4,500, still be in a bull market. Wouldn't be surprised to wake up and it's closer to 4,700 one day at the same time. So about a $200 range there. These things don't grow to the sky, but as Gerardo says, when they are correcting and when they are coming down to the bottom of the ranges, they are getting bought up now pretty quickly. Silver, top end is really 93, 90, $94. It has more downside than upside, at least in the immediate term. You can see it down to $81, has got a little bit ahead of its skis. Those $7 and $10 up days can cut both ways in an environment like this. So don't be surprised to see it down in the mid to low 80s before it gets back up to 90. Use those dips as places to deploy more capital. That's what I was writing about in Underground Alpha today, which will likely get sent out while we're talking, is there's things I want to add to and buy. I am pruning and planting. I am taking a little bit of profit and going into other, but I'm also coming off some cash that I'm still sitting on to get my positions bigger. Market caps matter. I was just taking a tour around the playground yesterday, and some of these market caps on these mid-tier producers are getting sneaky high. Like you look at like an Artemis or a K92 or something like that, and these are multi-billion-dollar companies now, quickly catching up to the Cores and the Heklas of the world. Just a billion or two difference in between them, and then on the lower end of the spectrum, between sort of 500 million, half a billion, and 1 billion. There's a lot of foolishness happening now. A lot of companies that have rushed up to that valuation, 300, 400, 500, 600 million, that may or may not deserve it. And a lot of companies on the low end of that, in the 100 to 200, 300 million, that have, I think, more and should be valued closer to a billion. So, like Gerardo says, make sure you're following the research of somebody that you know and trust on. Copper, the range has really narrowed. I mean, you're right there between 570 and 620. That's a really healthy price for copper. You're going to need some more sort of fundamental news or some sort of announcement to drive it higher. But if it sits just right at $6, as we talked about last week, that does wonders for the preliminary economic assessments, feasibility studies, and et cetera, bankable feasibility studies that use those higher copper prices as an input. So I was going to take a tour around the metals landscape, if you'll indulge me just for a second, and I was just going to click on a couple of other charts and see what the prices have been doing. Do you mind if I do that?
Consider yourself indulged,
Oh,
Mr.
I
Hodge.
love being indulged. So let's look at lithium. We'll make it by a ton because that's what it gets quoted. I look at this website all the time and just look at lithium in the past year, for example. So I believe so far this year, lithium might even be outpacing silver, which is hard to believe. But you'll see here, lithium's more than doubled just in the past 6 months, going from below $10,000 a ton lithium carbonate to, I read today, it touched $22,000 a ton. And so let's look at another one. Is nickel in here? Yeah, look what nickel's doing here, over and up and to the right, basing out at $15,000 a ton, and then just in the past month, and really just in the past month since mid-December, going from $14,500 a ton of nickel all the way up to $19,000 a ton. What else is worth looking at? We've mentioned tin a couple of times. Here's tin up and to the right. That's
Look
a
at that.
50%
Woo!
move in a
Birdie.
year. You can put it back to 6 months and it might be even more dramatic. Yeah, $35,000 a ton to $55,000 a ton of tin. This stuff is up and to the right. I think you can even get a neodymium in here. Look at that. Neodymium from $80,000 a ton to $120,000 a ton, right? These are up and to the right for most metals. I won't keep doing it. We've already talked about gold and copper, and silver, but the announcements keep.
Antimony. Yeah, I mean, we can go on.
That's right. And now you're getting individual announcements. Like I see gallium in this list. Well, there was like a $150 million announcement this week. You probably missed that the government was taking a direct stake in a gallium producer, right? So these announcements are coming fast and furious. The prices continue to go up and to the right, and we've definitely got ourselves a bull market in the critical precious base and energy metals. And I know you mentioned uranium, but haven't even mentioned that yet. So a lot to like out there for sure.
Yeah. And again, folks, we've been in cycles where a Fed announcement, the Fed announcement this past week was that he was potentially going to be under criminal investigation for not lowering rates fast enough for His Majesty. On Sunday evening, Mr. Powell came out, and for all my disdain for the Fed, I'm all for abolishing it. But if we're gonna have it, there is something to be said for the rule of law. It's what separates us from, all the other countries, or what has traditionally separated us from societies and civilizations and governments that go the way of Rome. And so I am all for the rule of law as it relates to everything. Apply it equally, and that includes Mr. Powell, who I have all of the smoke for when it comes to Fed, wealth inequality and how the Fed has contributed to that. But say what you say. We either get a new Fed in the next month or two, by His Majesty's choice, or we get a new Fed by, I want to say, what is it, May, if I'm not mistaken, because his term will be up. There used to be a market before these structural deficits where the Fed was going to be extremely consequential in the price of metals and what the dollar index did. Because of our current debt levels and the amount that it costs to service that debt, and because of the structural deficits in the metal space, where any dip is bought, and it's being bought by governments, corporations, individuals, you name it, the Fed is less consequential, in my opinion, over the next several years than it has ever been. Whether we get rate cuts the way that Mr. Trump would like the rate cuts, or we get a surprise hike, isn't going to have as big an impact on the overall metals markets, not the overall indices. Very big difference between what's going on in the metals markets and the overall indices. I want to make sure I'm clear about that. I want to separate the two. But what are your thoughts on the Fed and the influence it's going to have here in the coming cycle? And by the coming cycle, I mean, this coming term.
Well, it goes from a must-watch or and everybody's glued to the Fed meetings to a nice-to-have tailwind. So I'm sure you can remember in the past 12, 18 months where everybody's been glued to the Fed meeting, parsing every word out of Jay Powell's mouth in his live remarks on the whatever Wednesday of the month the Fed meeting is, parsing the questions that come. And now it's almost almost an afterthought. We've got a couple of cuts in the latter part of 2025. And then they held off at the most recent meeting in December. Man, there's like only a 5% chance of another cut this month. So I think market participants are getting good at reading the tea leaves, and maybe the Fed will come more back into focus as we get closer to that next rate cut. But it's just going to be more fuel for the fire. So you're not going to get a rate cut this month. It's going to stay at 3.5 to 3.75. I'm looking at the market probabilities right now, which have actually been going down. Only an 18% chance of a cut at the March meeting, only a 29% chance of a cut at the April meeting. They don't meet in May. That's the end of Jerome Powell's tenure. You'll get an appointed Fed chair after that from Donald Trump. It'll be a sycophant
Complete with
or
knee pads.
that's exactly right. Someone who services the administration, as it were. And then that person will want to cut the rates, which is why at the June meeting, they don't meet in May. At the June meeting, you get closer to a 50% chance of a rate cut down to 3.25 to 3.5%. And so that's not wagging the dog anymore, right? It's not, we're waiting for a Fed cut for metals prices to go up. And sort of same with the dollar, like w which we haven't mentioned this week. I'm not sure if we talked about it last week or not, but the dollar's actually been strengthening as these hopes
A little
for rate
bit.
cuts dissipate and get pushed out into the future. You've got a DXY that's actually moved up from 97 or so, closer to 100, 99 point something. And what we've seen with that is positive correlations with the metals, not the typical inverse correlations that you would say dollar up, metals down. No, it's been dollar up, gold and silver continue to go up, right? So all these historical correlations and stuff that we point to, again, either in bear markets or in cyclical bull markets where we're grasping or looking for, you know, the next shoe to drop. Here you're in a bull market for metals and these things matter less. You were smart to point out the difference between the macro markets and then the metals markets, because these things still do matter for the macro markets, and you're getting a bit of new and widening breadth. And what I mean by that is now you've got the S&P moving to new highs while the NASDAQ takes a little bit of a breather. And I'm sure you'll get some Cassandras saying, oh, these tech stocks are falling, we're going to get a crash. No, I still don't see a crash. I don't see a recession. We just printed 4%, which we haven't really talked about because the number came out a few weeks ago, but printed plus 4% GDP growth. Inflation is going down. A lot to like out there in the economy, as long as you're an asset owner. And certainly if you're a stock market algorithm with growth growing up and inflation going down, and other sectors are starting to lead, like industrials have pulled ahead, and some of these material and metal stocks are leading as well. So an ongoing bull market in the broader sense of things, and definitely a specific bull market in the commodity space.
Well, there you go, folks. Look, it's simple in this week. The metals are going higher. Uranium, copper, tin, lithium, gold, silver. There will be pullbacks. Dips are meant to be bought. If you don't buy them, don't worry. Somebody else will. That is the trend. The trend is absolutely your friend in this market. And, you know, I've had a couple of friends approach me here recently and say, can you explain to me again what you do? Right? They've seen several of our friends and family members do really well. And, you know, they're starting to get a little bit more curious. And, you know, that's translated into, well, can you kind of, you know, point me in the right direction if I had X amount of dollars. And I love that. I love that because in this market, you know, I've had those kinds of requests in tough markets, and luckily it's gone well for people. But in this market, I get more confident because of the quality of our deal flow and the access that we can do a lot of good for a lot of people. And I'm really, really excited for the rest of the year. Did you want to do the reader questions on the premium portion of the podcast, Nick, or you want to open it up to everybody and be extra generous today?
Let's do them as part of the free section, but just before we get there, just one thing to add on so I can fill out my bizarro banter box for the week and I have something to write about. Nothing to rant about, really. I mean, always something to rant about, but we did some pretty good ranting last week. Yeah. So like you, I'm going to leave it alone a bit. But I would just say another question about friends and acquaintances, not necessarily having to do with the stock market, but just in terms of how we perceive and go through this crazy world. Jimmy Mengel, you know, our director of member services, actually wrote a good article about this last week. He was the title was, "Are you living in a flood zone, or are you in a flood zone, or something like that?" And his article was about how part of Trump and really pick your politician or global leader or whatever. Part of Trump's plan is to flood the zone with so many announcements that you can't keep up. ICE deployments here, insurrection acts there, announcements from the DOJ here, weaponizing the DOJ there, DOE announcements here. And you're like this, right? You're like a squirrel looking for the next acorn, and you're not really digesting or processing all of it. You're just going from headline to headline being enthused or outraged, depending on what your partisan leanings are. I would, of course, tell you to not lean partisan at all. Try to center yourself, anchor yourself somewhere in the middle, and view the world through that lens in terms of markets and politics and lots of other things. I found in life that truth is often somewhere in the middle. You can sort of throw out your outliers and zoom into to some sort of reality. The other part is he was saying that, you know, we took you and I, Gerardo, took ourselves out of the flood zone, which is sort of what I just said, and created our own areas where we can operate in, whether that's your place in Texas or my place here, and focus on what it is that we focus on, family, friends, our business, and the markets, and sort of know our role, stay in our lane, and use that expertise, however narrow or skinny it is, to help the people in our spheres, whether that's in our, you know, in real life sphere or in our newsletter, you know, membership sphere, which is thousands of people at this point. And so
We're going to need more Jefferson Nichols.
just real quick, and we'll get into the reader questions. We were in Portland last week. I told you that. I don't know if I told the listeners. We had a cheer competition. It was a fun time, man. We zipped down to Portland, got our Airbnb, had a couple of nice meals, went to the cheer competition. And then I was at my other daughter's basketball practice earlier this week, and one of the dads was asking me about, you know, Portland. And you've heard me rant about Spokane, but that's because I live here and I see it every day. I think he was asking me in retrospect, like, he was asking me, like, is it still a shithole, or, you know, are they still having problems? But I didn't spend enough time there to really know. I just told him that, no, we went there. We had a couple of nice dinners. We had a great cheer competition. They got third place. And then we came back. You know, I saw a couple of leaners. I saw a couple of tents underneath the overpass. But I didn't go looking for that stuff. And I was trying not to get myself worked up. And so maybe I could apply that more to my life here in Spokane. But that's typically how I go about it. Like, and fortunately, I guess is the point I wanted to make. We put ourselves in a position to do that. Like, we drove to a nice part of Portland. We got ourselves a nice Airbnb, had the whole house to ourselves, walked to a couple of nice restaurants, and walked to the convention center where the thing was, and then packed our bags and went home Sunday morning. Like, wasn't really worried about anything else, right? So try to do that in your day to day, and hopefully that made some sort of sense and we can get into these reader questions. So these will be free. I think we've got three of them on the docket. Some darn good questions.
Yeah, good questions too. Appreciate you all writing in. You guys have been writing in, not just testimonials, but good questions. Appreciate them all.
Perfect. I'll read them and then we can knock them down, or you can knock them down, depending on what the question is. The first one, I think, is, well, it's for both of us, but you'll do a better job answering it. So the first one is from Jerry V. And Jerry V says that Sirius Resources had a news release actually today, January 15th. And we were in it because they're going to do some sponsorship of Resource Stock Digest. And in the press release, it said that RSD or any of their principals, which we are the principals, you and I, we don't have an interest directly or indirectly in the securities of Sirius. And Jerry is wondering, since you've recommended it as a strong buy with good return potential, and we tout ourselves as having skin in the game or eating our own cooking. He's trying to rectify this in his brain. How are you recommending Sirius if you don't own any shares? You want to tell him why? You want to make
most clear? Most absolutely. And just a clarification and a distinction of the several businesses that Nick and I operate and own, right? Co-own. So Resource Stock Digest is a platform by which companies pay us so that we can introduce their story to our broad audience, right? And so we have sponsors on that site that pay us a monthly fee. We vet the stories, obviously. We don't take companies that we think are gimmicks, or, you know, we like to make sure that the companies we have featured on the site are companies that can provide shareholders a good opportunity to make some money in the market, right? And it helps with due diligence because you, the user, the audience, gets to see and hear interviews with CEOs, with top geologists, with CFOs. You get all of that on the company's dime. So that is Resource Stock Digest. That is the site that Sirius has engaged us to help tell their story, because we believe it's a phenomenal story with a phenomenal group backing them. The other business is Digest Publishing. That is the publishing company that Nick and I co-own that takes $0 from companies or anyone. What we do there is we provide financial research that includes recommendations on what we are doing in the market or companies that we think have the potential to provide you double, 100% returns, 500% returns, 1,000% returns. We've done that many a time, folks. Frankly, look, we've done it several times just in the past 12 months. That is a completely independent service, and there is no amount of money you could get us to recommend you in one of those letters. Our responsibility is to the subscribers that pay for our research. Sirius is one of those rare companies because of the Osisko development rebranding that's going on. Sean Rusin and Lawrence Farmer coming on. Having 3 million open pittable ounces in James Bay with a clear path towards 5 million open pittable ounces in James Bay via exploration and the expansion of the pit shell. I could go on. They have three other projects that are in James Bay that, you know, are highly prospective for gold. And we have a gold bull market. That company is going a lot higher. the devil's always in the details. The reason that we don't directly or indirectly own any shares as of the timing of that release, which was this morning, is because Nick and I are both substantial shareholders of the private company that is now merging with Sirius. That transaction has not been consummated. It hasn't been finalized. It will be in the next 2 to 4 weeks, at which point, because of our large holdings in OVI Mining, we will get 2.34 Sirius shares for every OVI Mining share that we currently own. That will translate into millions of Sirius shares. So as far as eating our own cooking, we have plenty of skin in that game, so I can guarantee you that. And so hopefully that answers your question. Yes, technically right now, because those shares haven't been issued, because the transaction has not been finalized, we technically don't own any of it. But we have millions of shares coming our way as a result of that merger. And believe you me, we're going to be holding on to those shares for quite some time and letting the re-rating happen. And this will be a freebie for everybody. We'll be extra generous today. That has 10-bagger written all over it in this market if they never find another gold ounce. Just with the rebranding, with Osisko coming in, and with the technical expertise and the capital markets experience that the Osisko Dev Group brings in. So hopefully that answered the question and clarifies a bit of what we do, how we do it, how we vet companies, and when they do, you know, end up in a newsletter, but are also on Resource Slack Digest, the different services and the different approaches that we take with those companies.
Wonderful. Well said and good answer. We'll move on to the next question, which I'm going to paraphrase because I don't want to give away all these specifics, but it's from member John Kay. And he says he's been really enjoying learning about the research we do and the recommendations. He's even done a private placement with us. And his portfolio is up since he started following us in mid-November. And he's looking forward to future growth. Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate the membership. John, thank you for joining. And then he goes on with the second paragraph here, which is his question. He says that outside of sort of those portfolios, he's got trusts set up for his five kids that are professionally managed. And even though they're professionally managed, he can give those managers input as to how he would like those portfolios managed. So he's looking for, this is the specific question, I'm looking for your recommendation for one or two of your best, easy to manage, overall recommendations for these trusts. He's not sure if junior ETFs like SILJ or GDXJ or gold royalty is what I've been calling gold scripts or individual equities would be the best for long-term hold positions. He wants them to get exposure to the current activity moving forward. Do you have any favorites that you could recommend? So let me give my spiel and my caveat, and then maybe both Gerardo and I can take a stab at this. So my spiel is we don't do individual advice, but we're answering this question in terms of how we would position our own kids, or if we were answering the question for ourselves. None of this is individual financial advice, obviously. And I would go out on a limb and say you're likely going to get two very different answers from
you think
from myself and Gerardo, because we do things different ways, especially for trusts. And when my kids are involved, I do things more conservatively and less speculatively. And so that's how I'll answer the question. You might get more speculative answer from Gerardo, but and that's the end of the caveat. Let me give you my answer here. So I do a couple of things, and this is, I think, pretty valuable. I've written about this a couple of times, but I always like talking about it. So I have a 401k that I put money into, and by nature of having a 401k, you got to own the funds that they give you, right? So like there's some Vanguard funds or some Hartford funds or some sector funds or whatever it is. And I manage those and through the lens and through the framework of how I'm currently seeing the market. So they aren't individual equities, like I don't own gold royalty companies, but I definitely own like the precious metals fund that's available to me in there, right? Whether that's a Vanguard or it's some other mutual fund, etc. I also have 529 plans for my kids that I put money into every month. And it's sort of the same thing there. You get even fewer picks with that 529 plan, depending on what state you have it set up through. I think mine, you just get a series of Vanguard funds and then like some target date funds. So I'm handcuffed to that. And then that I manage my own portfolios, right? I've got a couple of portfolios in Schwab's, IRAs, taxable brokerages that I use to manage my own investments. And that's what I write about in Underground Alpha and Foundational Profits, with Foundational Profits being much more safe and long-term focused and sort of how I would be comfortable answering this question. So for me, for my money, I probably wouldn't pick an individual stock, and I probably would not pick a junior miner to put in a trust for any of my three kids or your five kids in this example. I would probably try to create or tell the fund manager what I was trying to do in creating what you call a permanent portfolio. And I've written about this a bit. Porter Sainsbury was writing about this a little bit recently, but it really goes back to, I think the gentleman's name is Harry Brown, and having essentially a quarter cash, a quarter gold, a quarter bonds, and a quarter stocks. I would do that a little different. And I've written about how I've done that for the lady who helps clean our house and a couple of other people. So you mentioned SILJ and GDXJ. Those could likely be on the table. I might scale it up to SLVR, which is the Sprott ETF that holds both miners and physical silver. I might scale that GDXJ up to a GDX or an outright GLD or AAAU that holds a physical amount of that metal in a 10 or 15% allocation. I might own a larger commodities fund, something like the Goldman Sachs Commodities Index. You can buy that in an ETF, trades under the ticker PDBC. I might throw a little bit of crypto in there. I'd probably have 5 or 10% in some sort of Ethereum trust or Bitcoin trust. And then I would sort of, depending on how often I got to give input, because that's a major determining factor. Like I can't give you one sector and say, oh, put your kids in that for the next 20 years. I need to sort of know the next time you're going to look at it. So without knowing that, I would put them in a broad-based equities fund, something like the VU or the VTI, like a total world market index with a low expense ratio. And that's how I would probably do it. Likely little bonds, a few bonds, considering they're so young. And if I did have to do that, and what I've done in the case of Jackie, our housekeeper, is just buy a large insurance company that manages bonds as part of their business that might also pay you a dividend. So I think I'll probably stop there. Those are, for me, some pretty good options to create a permanent portfolio to get access to some of the themes we talk about while also getting access to the broader stock market and some international equities. Because I wouldn't want to go putting my kids all into, I laugh, but they would likely end up outperforming, but that's not the point of the answer. I wouldn't go put all my kids' trust money into junior miners. It's just not how I sort of view the game, but I'm interested to see how Gerardo wants to tackle this.
So first off, go Illinois, go Bears, and go Cubs, right? We've had ourselves a great couple of weeks. Look, the very first thing I did when my wife retired from her director position at the hospital was we liquidated her 401k and I put it all in junior resource stocks. So that is the sandbox I play in exclusively. I don't do any ETFs. I don't do any indexes. I don't do any bonds. I keep very little cash on hand. By very little cash, I mean outside of the market, right? Obviously, there's cash there and liquidity is always there, but I like to make sure as many of my dollars are at work where I think I'm going to get the most torque. So again, I can't give individual specific advice. I would highly recommend, and if you're a subscriber, great, you'll know this already, but I would highly recommend you subscribing to a bundle of Nick and I's services and Chris Curl services. And to that end, and hopefully Nick doesn't mind this, but if you reach out to Jimmy, who does a phenomenal job for us as our customer service wizard, we can put together a pretty attractive package for all of the publications so that, you know, you can get our weekly and our monthly thoughts on the different ways that Nick and I are approaching these markets. Because again, in this market, you can do exceptionally well doing the high risk, high reward stuff that I do, but that's not for everyone. And that may not be for you. And that may not be the best long-term plan for your children or for yourself. That would be obviously up to you to look over and kind of decide how much risk do you want to take on? What kind of returns are you trying to get? And what timelines do you have? You could do a balanced approach that takes, you know, some of my high risk, high reward stuff that I do, and some of Nick's more balanced, more liquid, less risk averse, right? Or more risk averse, I should say, in this case, approach. That really ends up being up to you. I'll tell you my four largest personal positions that will likely be that for the next several years. And that is PMET Resources is our group's top lithium position. Hannon Metals, Peru, copper gold. Lion Rock Resources, assays pending. I'm hoping next week, fingers crossed. Tin, lithium, and high-grade gold in America on private land. Doesn't get much better than that if they have the goods. They might not have the goods. We'll find out, I hope, starting next week. And then Kingsman Resources. So that's silver and gold in Mexico. So that gives you Peru, South Dakota, Mexico, and James Bay, Quebec, right? That gives you exposure in those four jurisdictions. And you get a mixture of copper, gold, lithium, and tin exposure in four companies where I know the management teams extremely well and believe that the asset mix provides compelling diversification in a metals market that I think continues to rip higher. You could say Kingsman's already worked. It's up 1600% for subscribers. I think Kingsman could be a tenfold position from current levels. And I know that sounds crazy from these when you're already up 1600%, but it's still only a $70 million market cap. The comps are $1 billion buyouts. That's what we're trying to build with Kingsman, right? It's got two districts. So I could go on and on about why I love all four of those companies. Hopefully you're able to reach out and hopefully you're a subscriber or subscriber of some of the services. But those are my four and our group's four largest personal positions that we have. And again, those are positions that are worth, you know, what's Mr. Bob Bishop's friend and mentor of ours, famous joke about playing with matchsticks.
Oh, you don't play, don't take advice from someone who plays poker with toothpicks or matchsticks. Yeah.
Yeah. Those positions are worth millions of dollars to us. So it's not, I'm not giving you like a journalist piece of advice or somebody just behind a desk that has, you know, $1,000 of exposure to each of those companies and calls themselves a shareholder. I have significant stock ownership, and we have significant stock ownership in each one of those four companies. So, man, I think that's as thorough an answer as you can get on a free podcast. Nick, good work, sir.
I was going to even give him a little more because I love this question.
Give it to him. It's a great question. Absolutely. I love Mr. Kraling, thank you so much.
I love portfolio construction, and I love different risk and risk appetites and timeframes. And that's one of the reasons I have the different letters. So first thing I'd say is every month in foundational profits, I put the allocations in there, how much I own or how much we own of each position. Well, how much I own of each position in the foundational profits model portfolio. So you can get a sense of where I'm weighted in that publication. And like Gerardo said, check out the other ones and you can see what else we own a lot of and what we write a lot about. I was just going to read the list of what I have Jackie in. So, and then move on to the next answer because we're getting long in the tooth. So this is a portfolio I created for, call it a 45-year-old woman who just received an inheritance, who's not going to manage her portfolio. She doesn't want to own individual junior miners. I didn't want to give her individual junior miners. And we're only going to look at this once a quarter, right? So truly like a quarterly rebalancing, set it and forget it, and then come back to it. So she's in 5% South Korea with a South Korea ETF. That could be really any Asian exposure. You could have India or China, whatever. 7% in tech stocks via the Qs. 7% in mining stocks via an ETF called PICK, P-I-C-K, which is also in foundational profits. 10% in Bitcoin, 10% in physical gold, 10% in bonds through a company called W.R. Berkley. It's William Berkley. He's a bond manager, so just bought his company. 10% in an income fund called BUXX, basically pays 6 or 7%. 10% in another income fund called CLOZ, basically pays 7 or 8%. 12% in the SPY, the S&P 500. 12% in small caps. And 12% in global equities via the VT Vanguard ETF. So that's the portfolio I created for her. Physical gold, physical Bitcoin, miners, international equities, and then income and bonds. So that's how I diversified her. And that's something I was confident saying, Jackie, this is what I would do. if I don't do, if I didn't do what I actually do, right?
I love that answer. A heck of an answer. Mr. Kraling, I hope that helps. And again, go Bears and go Cubs. I think we're going to have ourselves a heck of a 2026. I think we have one last one before we let the good folks go and just get to the premium portion really briefly here after this next question and say adios to everyone.
Because we're getting long in the tooth. Yes. Yeah, so last question from Renee N. Her question just says, cash. I've heard the next few years could be very difficult, mostly around 2028, possible bank closures. What are your ideas for safely storing cash? You want it or do you want me to do it?
I'm going to let you take that one because, you know, I don't safely do most things. So
yeah, and that's sort of an end of the world question, which I've been expecting for at least the past two decades, and it hasn't come yet. So look, I'm not sure the world's going to end tomorrow or in 2028. I do think that those will be some of the more heated years of this fourth turning before we get to a rectification in the early 2030s. All that said, I don't invest today because of 2028. So I'll just give you the blanket answer. You should have 5 to 10% of your net worth in physical hard precious metals that you store somewhere safe that you don't include in your portfolio or your stocks or your other allocations. I do that with physical gold and silver and Bitcoin on a flash drive. All three of those things are on my safe. I would view that as sort of my safe cash. The other sort of cash I have is the money I use to pay all my weekly bills, right? Pay off the credit card every month, pay the mortgages, put money in the kids' 529s. That's just in a slush interest-bearing checking account at Schwab. I keep however much I need there for a month-to-month basis, $20,000, $40,000, $50,000, whatever it is. The other cash I own is in my portfolio. And you can think about that in a couple of ways. One, just cash, dry powder. I keep that in a money market fund. I use Schwab, so it's, I think, SWVXX. But there's a couple flavors of that on Schwab or any financial institution you use where you can earn yourself 3, 4, 5%, whatever they're offering. The next place is cash in the portfolio is holding gold, something highly liquid. I had the GLD, a pretty good exposure to that. You'll see that in the foundational profits. Gold is cash, so that's why I'm including it in the answer, although in this case it's also an asset allocation. And then the last thing is the some of those funds that I just mentioned in the last answer. I keep a fair amount of cash in CLOZ, which is also in foundational profits. It's yielding 5 or 6 or 7%, highly liquid. And so if I need more cash from my portfolio, I can grab that from either the money market fund or those two other funds I mentioned. I think one's a collateral debt fund, and then one is just a hard gold ETF, or not hard in the case of GLD. I know, don't write in, please. That's how I save all, that's how I have the different levels of cash, either safe insurance cash, actual cash for month-to-month expenses, and then cash in the portfolio. So three different ways. If that doesn't make sense, or you have further questions, please do reach out. Anything to add to that?
No, I'm just sitting here wishing I could allocate your cash position to some more of my stocks.
Richard Poor, it's good to have cash, Gerardo.
That's a fact. That's a fact. No, look, it's been great. It's been almost an hour. Let's do a quick premium portion of this podcast, and then we will let you all go. That's it, folks. Thanks for hanging in there. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 349th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Stay safe out there, folks. Take care. We'll see you next week.
See ya.